Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate
from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 90, chapter entitled The Summary of Lord Krishna's Glories, text number 19 and 20.
Kim
nu acharitam asmabir malayanila te priyam govinda panga Nirbine Ridira Yasi Naha Smaran Kim Govinda Panga Nirbine Ridira Yasi Nasmaran Kim nuacharitam asmabir Malaya nila te priyam Govinda panga nirbine Hridirayasi nasmaran Kim vacharitam asmabir Malaya nila te priyam Govinda panga nirbine Hridirayasi nasmaram
What?
Nu,
indeed.
Acharitam,
action done.
Asmabi,
by us.
Malaya,
of the Malaya mountain range.
Anila,
O wind.
Te,
to you.
Apriyam,
displeasing.
Govinda,
of Krishna.
Apanga,
by the sidelong glances.
Nirbine,
which has been shattered.
Hridi,
in the hearts.
Irayasi,
you are inspiring.
Naha.
How?
Smaram.
Lust.
Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. O Malayan breeze, what have we done to displease you, so that you stir up lust in our hearts, which have already been shattered by Govinda's sidelong glances? Translation responsibly. O Malayan breeze, what have we done to displease you, so that you stir up lust in our hearts,
which have already been shattered
by Govinda's sidelong glances? Text 20. O revered cloud, you are indeed very dear to the chief of the Yadavas, who bears the mark of Sri Vatsa. Like us, you are bound to him by love and are meditating upon him. Your heart is distraught with great eagerness, as our hearts are, and as you remember him again and again, you shed a torrent of tears. Association with Krishna brings such misery. Purport. The Acharyas explain this verse as follows. The cloud acts as the friend of Lord Krishna by shielding him from the scorching rays of the sun And certainly such an earnest well-wisher of the Lord must constantly meditate on him with concern for his welfare. Although the cloud shares the Lord's blue complexion, it is Lord Krishna's distinctive features, such as his Srivatsa mark, that especially attract him to this meditation. But what is the result? Simply unhappiness. The cloud is depressed and thus constantly sheds tears on the pretext of raining. So the queens advise him, it would be better for you not to take much interest in Krishna. Omagyan Timanandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitamyena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swa Patantikam Vancha Kaupatarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Ram Ram Hare Hare. So, the Bhagavatam is principally about Krishna, because in the Bhagavatam, as we've mentioned previously, there are around 330 chapters in the Bhagavatam. So if you look at the Bhagavatam, 330 chapters, then the Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, it has 90 chapters, which is what we're just about to finish. And in the beginning of the third canto, there is at least four chapters there directly about Krishna. At the end of the first canto, from chapter 7 onwards, Krishna appears, and he's more or less there until chapter 15, 16, like that, directly. Up to chapter 11, he's directly there. And the 11th canto is the Uddhava Gita, which means Krishna's instructions to Uddhava before he left this world. So if you add up the amount of chapters which are directly in connection to Krishna in the Bhagavatam, you'll see that most of the Bhagavatam is directly discussing Krishna's pastimes. And every other chapter or every other canto or every other pastime in the Bhagavatam is simply leading to glorifying Krishna directly. That's how we understand the Bhagavatam. Each scripture has a governing verse, or a verse which governs the entire scripture. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Paribhasa Sutra, or the governing verse of the Bhagavatam, is Canto 1, Chapter 3, Verse 28. Ete chamsa kala pumsa Krishnas tu bhagavan swayam indrari vyakulam lokam mridiyanti yuge yuge. So it describes within that verse of the Bhagavatam, Krishnas tu bhagavan swayam. There are many incarnations of God, which the Bhagavatam mentions. Ete chamsa kala pumsa. Amsa means parts. Many, many incarnations. And kala means expansions of the incarnations. Suta Goswami mentions there are as many incarnations of Krishna as there are waves in the river. Just continuously incarnations are coming, one after another after another after. Krishna himself appears once in a day of Brahma. Every day in Brahma he comes. Yeah. In Brahma's year, he comes every single day. And he's just one of the incarnations who come in a day of Brahma. There are 999 other blackish incarnations who also appear in a day. So they just continuously come, these incarnations. But of all the incarnations, Krishna's tu. Tu means but. Krishna's tu. But Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam. Means that he is the original Bhagavan himself. Swayam means himself. He is the original personality of Godhead himself. This is what the Srimad Bhagavatam is enunciating, or this is what the Bhagavatam is elaborating upon, this point, that he is the original person. And many of the chapters in the Bhagavatam, you could even say a major portion of the Bhagavatam, is directly speaking about Krishna himself. And the other chapters, or the other parts of the Bhagavatam, the other cantos, all the other leelas, are simply seen in the light or in the context that they are elaborating upon this point. Sometimes when you read a book, you may lose the plot of the book. No? You're going through the book, but you understand, why is this being spoken? Why is this being spoken? You know, what is the point of this? What is the intent of the author here? So in the Bhagavatam, we may sometimes feel like that. What is going on here? Yeah? There's not even a necessary chronology within the Bhagavatam. It's not that the pastimes follow one after another. One minute, you know, you're in the earth. Next minute, you're in the heavenly planets. Next minute, you're beyond this material creation. You know, it just continuously changes in time and place and circumstance. But to bring the whole thing back into context and to understand what the Bhagavatam is trying to elaborate upon, we simply go back to the governing verse of the Bhagavatam, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. It is elaborating that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. When the Bhagavatam describes creation in the second canto, in the third canto, when it gives the elaborate descriptions of the creation, it is simply doing this to show that Krishna is the source of Mahavishnu, who is the source of all other Vishnus in the creation. This is simply why creation has been spoken. If you try to understand, why are we speaking about creation? Why aren't we speaking about the Rasa Lila? Why aren't we speaking about Krishna's intimate Vrindavan pastime? Because it is showing that he is the source of everything else. Right? He is the Param Satyam Dimihi. He is the original personality. He is the Anadiya, Adiya, Govinda. Right? He is the source of everything else. He is the origin of everything else, and he himself has no origin. So this is the point which the Bhagavatam is elaborating upon, or trying to teach us like that. So we see here in the 10th canto that the 10th canto is compared to be like Krishna's smiling face. The Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna. It is the literary incarnation of Krishna. And just like the deity, when we take darshan of the deity, Prabhupada explains, we should begin with the deity's lotus feet and gradually allow our eyes to ascend to the deity's lotus face. So similarly, this is how we study the Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 1 and 2 are said to be Pada Padma. They are the lotus feet of the Lord. And then gradually, Canto 3, Canto 4, rise up to the thighs. And then Canto 5, higher, 6, 7, 8. The ninth canto is said to be his lotus neck. And then Canto 10 is said to be his smiling face. Canto 11 is his forehead, and Canto 12 is his helmet. So gradually we allow ourselves to go through. So we're just about to finish the description of Krishna's smiling face. Krishna's smile specifically is said to be chapters 29 to 33. His pastimes with the gopis. This is said to be the smile of Krishna. Because when someone smiles, they become very attractive. So when Krishna is smiling, he is most attractive. So then, those particular chapters are his most attractive pastimes with his devotees. So we're just about to finish this final part of the Bhagavatam, which is the final part of the 10th canto, his smiling face. And we see that his intimate pastimes are being described with his queens in Dwarka. Now, to understand all of these pastimes, one must understand the science of rasa. This is described in a preliminary way by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Ras Amrita Sindhu, in the Nectar of Devotion, which Prabhupada has translated as the Nectar of Devotion. In order to understand Krishna's pastimes, you must understand the science of rasa. Rasa means mellow or taste. Relationship. You must understand that The science of rasa, or how Krishna as Rasa Raj or Rasika Shekhar is the he is the inaugurator and the expander of rasa within his pastimes. Otherwise it's very difficult to understand Krishna's pastimes if you don't understand that he's doing everything he does, and all of his different pastimes are simply to expand rasa or taste or pleasure for his devotees. Otherwise, why does Krishna do all these things that he does? Just like when Krishna left Vrindavan to go to Mathura with Akrura, Krishna said to all the residents of Vrindavan, they were totally overcome by anxiety that they would be separated from him. So much so that even the gopis, who were never publicly with Krishna, they all went and grabbed Krishna's chariot and the horses and the reins of the horses, and they tried to stop the chariot from leaving, right, in the middle of all of the residents of Vrindavan. And they were so disturbed by the fact that Krishna was leaving that they totally forgot everything external. And they went and they were physically trying to stop the chariot. And Radharani was just standing in front of Krishna, just crying and crying and crying, and saying to Krishna, how can you leave? Don't you love us? Why would you go? Like in front of Mother Yashoda, in front of everyone, right? Just letting all of their emotions come out. So why would Krishna do this? Why wouldn't he get off the chariot and stay there? If everyone's crying and everyone's feeling so much separation from him, why did he leave? Because he knew it would increase the rasa. He knew it would increase the feelings of attachment to him. That's why he does it. That's why he separates himself from the devotees. Because he knows that absence makes the heart grow fonder. So there has to be periods of separation, because then by vipralamba, or by separation, then the sambhog, or the union of Krishna and his devotees becomes sweeter. Then the union becomes intense and nectarian. Right? If Krishna is with them all the time, what is that saying? Familiarity breeds contempt. Not that it would, but it's not as nectarian if there's not separation involved. So therefore there has to be some separation. So this is the science of rasa. Otherwise it's very hard to understand Krishna's pastimes. Just like it says here, the queens of Krishna are speaking to the clouds. This is how full of rasa, or how nectarian, or how wonderful Krishna's pastimes are, is that the devotees in Krishna's pastimes, in Krishna's lila, they speak to clouds. And the clouds are also devotees. And generally you will not find this so much in literature around the world. Right? Sometimes you'll find some mythology or something, some rock speaks or something, or some tree speaks, just like in The Hobbit. Or in Tolkien, Lord of the Rings or something, the trees speak and this and that. But it all comes from the Bhagavatam. It all comes from Vedic literature. This is the origin of life or consciousness in all entities. In the spiritual world, everything has consciousness. Right? The vines, the trees, right? All the animals, everything in Vrindavan has equal states of consciousness. In the spiritual world, everyone is Krishna consciousness, is Krishna conscious. Just like it is said in the Brahma Samhita, Chintamani. Right? What does mani mean? Mani means jewel or stone, like that. Chinta. Chinta means conscious. Prabhupada translates, or Bhaktisanta Saraswati Thakur translates as thought conscious. Meaning that even the jewels or the stones on the ground in Vrindavan, they have consciousness. Consciousness means they are conscious of Krishna. They have love for Krishna. Everything in the spiritual world has love for Krishna. So in these pastimes, in this particular pastime, the clouds are devotees of Krishna. And what is the service that they perform for Krishna? They shade Krishna. They shade Krishna in the pastimes. They come in and they shade him from the hot sun. That is their service. That is their seva. And then, in their ecstasy, when they show ecstasy, or when they feel great emotion or satisfaction to Krishna, then they rain. Their tears come in the form of rain. And that is their feelings of love for Krishna being exhibited like that. So, the queens of Krishna, they are saying to the clouds, why are you attracted or why are you interested in this personality? And this is a theme that is always spoken by the gopis of Vrindavan. Right? They say to the other living entities, why are you interested in this person? Why would you be interested in Krishna? You have to understand rasa to understand these pastimes. Because the whole point of our philosophy is to become Krishna conscious, is to develop love for Krishna. Right? Rupa Goswami says that the governing theme of our philosophy is to always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. And then when you finally get to always remembering Krishna and you see the topmost devotees are always remembering Krishna, and they say, don't remember him. This is the juxtaposition or the dichotomy of the pastimes with Krishna, that the topmost devotees that we're aiming to aspire to follow, right? It is said that we follow in their footsteps to always remember Krishna. That's our goal. And then when you get to them and you listen to their words, they say, don't remember him. So it's better if you forget him. So why is that? You have to understand the science of rasa. Right? The goal is to remember him. Okay, so now we're chanting 16 rounds a day. Right? We're doing all our service. We do so much tapasya. We do so much service. We're trying to attain Krishna. We're trying to give pleasure to Krishna. Trying to develop our love for Krishna. And then we're meditating on Krishna's pure devotees who eternally serve him in the spiritual world. And then you read their comments in the Bhagavatam, they say, forget him. Don't worry about him. It's better you never have anything to do with him. Why is that? This is the science of rasa, because it drives them mad. Because when they're separated from him, they say there's only unhappiness. So do you want to be unhappy? Do you want to be like us? Right? We can't stop thinking of him. And now he's not here, and now we're just feeling unhappy. So do you want to be like us? Better you don't. Think of him. So this is what they are teaching. But this vipralamba, or this separation, Krishna does it within his pastimes simply because he wants to increase the attachment of all the devotees. He wants them to develop deeper and deeper and deeper love for him. So that's why he separates himself from them. So then the sambhog, or the union, becomes intense and sweet. So Krishna will say, Krishna will sometimes leave, like he'll go to Mathura. And Krishna promises everyone as he leaves, he says, I'll be back in a few days. 1 or 2 days I'll go, right? I'll do my business and then I'll come back. Come straight. And then he didn't come back. Right? He didn't come back in the pastimes. He did not come back for 2 or 3 months. Factually speaking, that's what Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said. He didn't come for 2 or 3 months. And he was just heightening their attachment to him. Right? Just make it more and more and more intense. And then finally he came back. And then he wound up his pastimes. Later on, he wound up his pastimes in this world, and then he went to the spiritual world with all of his devotees. So, it describes that the clouds and all of the different living entities in Vrindavan, in the spiritual world, then they have pure love for Krishna. And they reciprocate with Krishna and they get involved in all of Krishna's pastimes. All of them have a position, or all of them have a purpose to fulfill in relation to Krishna in his pastimes. And Krishna, he notices every one of those devotees. It is not that one has to feel, well, what happens if I get back to the spiritual world and I'm just a blade of grass? Then what will happen? How will I have any association with Krishna? How will I fulfill my desires to serve Krishna? How will I be happy or satisfied in that position? But it's described that every living entity in the spiritual world gets reciprocation from Krishna. It describes earlier in the 10th canto, when he leaves Nandagram in the morning and he goes out into the forest herding the cows, he glances at every single vine and creeper and flower and great blade of grass and deer and humming bee and peacock and everyone as he goes out into the forest. Right? He satisfies everyone just by glancing at them. And as he goes past, all the creepers, he touches them, just brushes his fingers across them as he goes past the trees and the creepers, and they feel ecstasy being touched by Krishna. And he plays his flute constantly. Within Vrindavan, he's constantly playing his flute. And by playing his flute, everyone is constantly enlivened or feeling bliss by hearing his flute and hearing the association of his flute. So it says, because this is a very special time of the year, because at this time of the year, this is the festival season, which began on the first night of Julan Jatra. This was the beginning of the season. This is our favourite time of year. That all the festivals, they come one after another, and they increase the bliss of the devotees. Because these festivals are full of wonderful reciprocation, and they give us a ability to perceive something which is taking place in this spiritual world. They're like every day we have the opportunity to perceive Krishna or to perceive his pastimes in the spiritual world. But especially on these days, these festival days, then the opportunity or the reciprocation coming from the spiritual world is increased and intensified thousands of times. So then when we go and we push Radha and Krishna on their julan, on their swing, we're actually participating in an eternal Nitya Lila, an eternal pastime in the spiritual world, where Radha and Krishna are swinging, and each one of us can get unlimited reciprocation from the deities while they perform their pastimes, right? And then it awakens our Krishna consciousness. It is like by involving ourselves in these pastimes with the deities, then it is like coming out of amnesia. Is that what it's called? When you forget who you are? Amnesia? Yeah. And you come out of amnesia. Just like when someone has amnesia, sometimes you have to take them to a place where they're familiar with, somewhere where they lived previously. And you have to give them association with people who they previously associated with. And with all these impressions, previous impressions, gradually their consciousness reawakens and they remember who I was, who am I. So similarly, when we enter into these pastimes and reciprocate with the deities, such as when we're doing Julan Yatra, then we become gradually awakened in our Krishna consciousness. Gradually we begin to remember who we are. Gradually we begin to identify that these are the pastimes that I want to be a part of. Gradually we think that I would also like to be, once again, in the spiritual world, pushing Radha and Krishna on their swing. So this is the opportunity which is given by these festivals like that. And then the other day we had the wonderful festival called Baladev Purnima. So Baladev Purnima is the appearance day of Krishna's brother Balaram. Now if you want to get close to Krishna, then you must get close to those who are close to Krishna. This is the principle of spiritual life. It is not possible to get close to Krishna by trying to approach him directly. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya says, Gopi, Bhatu, Pada Kamala Yo, Dasa, Dasa, Anudasa. Be a servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, who is the master of the gopis. This is how we come close to Krishna, by trying to please those who are dear to him. So we become close to Krishna when we develop attachment for those who are very dear to Krishna. So on Baladev Purnima, then we see we have an opportunity to develop our attachment for one of Krishna's dearest, one of the personalities who is dearest to Krishna, which is Lord Balaram. Because Lord Balaram is Krishna's eternal brother in the spiritual world. And he is servant to Godhead. So therefore, by being attached to Balaram, then we become more attached to Krishna. Because Balaram is very dear to Krishna, and Balaram's entire consciousness is focused on pleasing Krishna. So this is how we also become dear to Krishna and develop our attachment to Krishna, by becoming attached to those who are dear to Krishna. Now, it is said that Krishna has certain qualities which are very particular to him, or which are only found in him. This is described by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion, that there are 60 qualities which God has. 10 of those qualities are only found in great personalities, and 5 of those qualities are only found in God himself. This is what makes God supreme, or Lord Narayan supreme. But it says, even though Narayan has these 60 qualities, God has these 60 qualities, there are 4 qualities which only Krishna himself has. And by having these 4 qualities, then this is what makes Krishna particularly attractive. Because Krishna is known to be all attractive. Krishna is so attractive that even his other incarnations are attracted to him. So these 4 qualities are called Madhurya Rupa. Rupa Madhurya. Right? Venu Madhurya. Prema Madhurya. And Lila Madhurya. Madhu means
sweet.
Like
honey.
Honey is called Madhu. There's one forest in Vrindavan called
Madhuvan.
The forest of the honey. And particularly, Lord Balaram is very fond of
honey.
Madhu. Especially, he likes to drink one beverage called Varuni juice. And if you want to be initiated into our Sampradaya, then you must take initiation by joining the 5-cup club of Varuni intoxicated devotees. And in this way, you can enter into these higher, the understanding of these higher pastimes of Krishna consciousness. All right? Make sure you cut that part out of the lecture, because that was a secret. That was a rahasya, that part. It's not for public disclosure. But so it's too late now, the secret is out. So this is the position, that Madhu means
sweet,
like that. So Krishna's 4 qualities which separate him from any other incarnation are the fact that his qualities are especially sweet. This is what makes him extra special. Of course, he's more powerful than even his other incarnations, in a sense that he's the origin of every incarnation. Not that he's more powerful. Each incarnation is equally powerful, because each incarnation is Krishna. But still, he is seen to be the origin of all incarnations, like that. But still, what makes him special or unique is his sweetness. So one of his sweet qualities is said to be his venu. His venu means his flute. Krishna's flute playing. As we said before, when Krishna plays his flute, it intoxicates and attracts everyone in Vrindavan. Now it says in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the Nectar of Devotion, that Krishna has 3 kinds of flutes. What are the 3 kinds of flutes called? Murali. Which one? Venu. And Vamshi. Just like we hear Krishna plays his flute at Vamshi Vat. Krishna is known as Murali Da. And then there is, in the Bhagavatam, there is the Venu Gita. So Krishna has these 3 types of flutes. Murali, right, Venu, and Vamshi. And each one is a different length. I can't remember which one's which. But one is very long. And this very long one, I think this is the Vamshi from memory. Very long, it has a very deep sound. And Krishna uses this to play, and creates like a very deep, intoxicating type of sound. Madhurya. Madhurya means like honey. Sweet. Goes into the night, like that. He plays the... And then he has Murali and Venu. Mm. So these are also a little shorter. One of his flutes is very short. He can play it with one hand. It's like only 6 inches long. You know, just like it's a little like... And he can play it with one hand if he likes. Just like... Very sweet. Must be more like high-pitched kind of sound. Then one is a little longer and then one is very long. Like that. So he plays them to evoke different moods in the pastimes. And it describes that whenever he plays his flute, the flute is so intoxicating that it reverses the natural activity of all the living entities in Vrindavan. When Krishna plays his flute, then all the inanimate objects become animated. And all the animated objects become inanimate. So it says that when he plays, then stone melts. Stone is normally hard, but stone becomes like butter. And if you go to Vrindavan, there are different places in Vrindavan where you can see where Krishna previously played his flute and where the stone melted and his footprint has entered into the stone. There's one place when you go on Braj Mandal Parikram out near Kamyavan, and this particular place, Krishna played his flute on top of a hill, and on this stone, and they've created a shrine or a like a little mandap over the over his footprint. And you can see Krishna, because Krishna was very tall. Krishna was like 7 foot tall. So you can see when he played his flute, his foot sunk into the stone. And his foot is very long. A very big foot. And then Krishna, because he crosses his foot, as we always see him on the altar, when he's playing his flute, he crosses his foot. So you can see the ball of his other foot on the... like that, melted into the stone. It's very clear. There's different places in Vrindavan where you can see things like that. In Govardhan Hill, you can see Krishna's footprints. You can see Balaram's mukut has fallen into the rock. You can see different things, different shilas or different stones. So when Krishna plays his flute, things which are normally hard become soft. When Krishna plays his flute, things which are normally animated, they become inanimate. Just like it says that when Krishna plays his flute, all the birds that are flying above him in the sky, they all become stunned by hearing his flute, and they become intoxicated, and they become mesmerized, and they just meditate on his flute, and then they forget to fly. So they all drop to the ground. So wherever Krishna is playing his flute, there are birds just dropping all around him, because everyone just becomes intoxicated. And it says that the cows and the deer, they're chewing their grass in the forest, but when they hear Krishna play his flute, they forget to stop chewing. And it says they become like statues in a painting. And everyone is just there. And the cow's ears go up like cups. You'll see when they listen to something, sometimes the cows put their ears up like cups and they just become stunned like statues and they just listen. And then all the grass in their mouth, which they're chewing, just begins to fall from their mouth. And they just listen, becoming intoxicated with Krishna's flute. And when Krishna plays his flute, it says that when he plays his flute, then each devotee, when he's playing, will hear their name being called by Krishna. So Krishna will play his flute, and that particular devotee will hear their name. So the devotee will hear Radharani, Radharani, Lalita, Vishaka, Champakalata. He's calling each of the devotees, and they will hear their name. Oh, Krishna is calling me. That's what happened when Krishna was in the forest. That Vamshivati began to play his flute and all the gopis heard their names being called. Radharani, Radharani, Lalita, Vishaka. So they were hearing, then everyone immediately, Krishna is calling. So they got up and they just ran out of the house. And all their family members said, where are you going? It's the middle of the night, it's dark outside, where are you going? And then they all ran to the forest to visit Krishna. And when they got to Vamshivad in Vrindavan, when they got to that place near the Jamuna and they actually met him, and Krishna was standing up in the tree, in the moonlight. And they all came and they stood in front of Krishna and they looked up at Krishna. And then Krishna looked at them and he said, what are you all doing here? He said, why did you come? He said, it's dark, right? There's dangerous animals in the forest. And you should be at home with your families. Go home. This is rasa. You have to understand. If you don't understand rasa, then you can't understand Krishna's bhakti. Why would he do that? Why would someone call you to come and meet them, and then you come and meet them and they say, what did you come for? What are you doing here? Better you go home. You think what is this person? Right? That's why the queens say, better you don't get involved with him. Right? He just confuses you and makes you unhappy. Right? He just causes you misery. Right? And he makes you attached to him and then he leaves you. And then when you come to him, he plays games with you. Yeah, the gopis say, better we forget this person. Like that. You have to understand rasa to understand all this. The pleasure which is in these pastimes. Mm-hmm. And then, Krishna has his Venu Madhurya, and then he has his Rupa Madhurya. Rupa Madhurya means his beauty, of his Rupa. Rupa means beauty or form. Mm-hmm. Krishna's form is so beautiful in Vrindavan that it attracts even Krishna when he's in Dwarka. When Krishna is in Dwarka and he is the prince of Dwarka and he is sitting in the Sudama assembly hall in the morning, and before the day's proceedings begin, when he begins to govern the kingdom of Dwarka, then sometimes in the morning they have some entertainment. So then some actors come in and they perform a drama, a play. And when they come in, one of the actors dresses up as Krishna in Vrindavan. And when Krishna himself in Dwarka, as Dwarkadish, when he sees the actor playing him his role in Vrindavan, he sees how attractive it is, he becomes attracted. And then he wants to run out and go to Vrindavan immediately. And he starts calling out to his cows. Oh, Shamala. Like that. He begins to call out and then he goes into the mood of Vrindavan. So Krishna in Vrindavan is so sweet and so attractive that it attracts even Krishna himself when he's in Dwarka. Just like when the gopis went to meet Krishna in Kurukshetra, and Krishna was dressed as a prince, as the Yadu prince, the Yadu Shrestha, or the best of the Yadu dynasty, then the gopis said to Krishna, take off your crown, right? Take off your armour. Right? Pick up your flute. Right? Put a peacock feather in your hair, and come and dance with us. Right? On the moonlit night, it's a beautiful full moon night. Let us go to the bank of the Jamuna. Right? And dance with us in the forest. The devotees in Vrindavan are only attracted to him in his beautiful Madhurya Rupa, or his sweet beauty of his cowherd boy Vaish, like that. So he has his Venu Madhurya, his Rupa Madhurya, and his Prema Madhurya. Prema Madhurya means the love of his Vrindavan resonance. It cannot be found anywhere else in his other incarnations. Why is it especially wonderful, the love which he has with his devotees in Vrindavan? Because he is involved in childhood pastimes. You won't find this in the other incarnations. You won't find Nisringadeva as a child. Right? You won't find Vamanadeva is like a child, he's young. You won't find Varahadeva or Matsya or Korma or Buddha or so many of his incarnations. You won't find childhood pastimes. So they have a sweetness that all of his pastimes, every pastime of the Lord is attractive. But when he's in the form of Krishna, he performs childhood pastimes. And these childhood pastimes are all attractive. Rupa Goswami says, Dwarka is perfect. Mathura is more perfect. But Vrindavan is most perfect. Because he is a child in Vrindavan. And you cannot compare his pastimes. His pastimes and sweetness cannot be compared to anywhere else. Because the love that he exchanges with his devotees, because in his other incarnations, when he's Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha, he doesn't have parents. Right? You never hear of his mother and father. In Vrindavan, he has mother and father, so therefore there is Vatsalya Ras. Right? He has the rasa of exchanging with his mother and father, and then he has so many wonderful pastimes with his mother and father. And just like very soon, Kartik Mas is coming. So in Kartik, then we have Damodar Lila. So just like for the devotees in Madhurya Ras, in Conjugal Ras, their topmost pastime is the Rasa Lila. So for the devotees in Vatsalya Ras, their topmost pastime is Damodar Lila. Where Mother Yashoda is chasing Krishna with a stick around the courtyard in Gokul. And they're trying to she's trying to capture him. All the devotees in Vatsalyas, they meditate on this pastime. It's so sweet seeing Mother Yashoda running around and Krishna, who's a little boy, running in fear of Mother Yashoda. Right? With his mascara or his cudgel on his eyes, his black mascara on his eyes, it's streaming from his tears, it's streaming down his face. And he's running around the courtyard. And this is captivating for the devotees in Vatsalya Ras. When Krishna and Balaram are little boys in Vrindavan, they go, one of the games they play, they go and grab onto the tails of the calves. Right? And then the calves begin to run. You know, feeling someone's on their tail, and they begin to run around the courtyard. Right? And Krishna and Balaram get dragged around the courtyard, Nanda Maharaj's cow barn. So this is some of the pastimes. So these are very attractive, the Prema Madhurya. And then Krishna's final quality is Lila Madhurya. Lila Madhurya means the sweetness of his pastimes. They cannot be compared to any of his other incarnations. All of his incarnations, all the pastimes are attractive and wonderful, but in Vrindavan his pastimes are full of sweetness. So this Lila Madhurya means his pastimes become sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. And then it says of all the pastimes, the topmost pastime is Rasa Lila. And it says when Krishna performs Rasa Lila, even the other pastimes worship Rasa Lila. Right? Even his other pastimes, they come and worship Rasa Lila, because when they see this pastime, this is the topmost Lila. This is the topmost. And it says that when Krishna performs Rasa Lila, his other incarnations come to see Rasa Lila. Because even they are attracted to Rasa Lila. It is such a wonderful pastime. It is so extraordinary, so beautiful. It describes in the Bhagavatam earlier on that when Krishna performed Rasa Lila, how many gopis did he dance with?
3 billion.
3 billion, right? That's half of Earth's population, right? 6 billion people. Imagine Krishna is dancing simultaneously with 3 billion gopis. And when Krishna was dancing, each gopi felt that Krishna was next to her. Each gopi felt, Krishna is dancing with me tonight. And Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur describes that when he was dancing, it wasn't that he expanded himself into 3 billion Krishnas. It was one Krishna, but he was moving so quickly between the 3 billion, it appeared that he was next to every one of them simultaneously. Right? That's powerful. That's God. That's why the other incarnations come. Because they just come to see this pastime. It's beyond description how wonderful it is and how sweet it is. And just like when Krishna's performing Rasa Lila in Vrindavan, Vrindavan is a dusty place. It is called Vrindavan is always full of Brajraj. Brajraj means the dust of Vrindavan. It's very dusty. So you imagine when 3 billion plus 3 billion Krishnas, that's 6 billion people, begin to dance, imagine how much dust there is. So Yogamaya, she flies at lightning speed in between Krishna and all the gopis, collecting all the dust like that, and putting it neatly in little piles underneath all the trees, right, while the Rasa Lila is going on, so that Krishna and gopis can enjoy their pastimes. The Simon, she's just flying through, right, just grabbing all the dust and just putting in little piles under the trees, like, so Krishna can. So what sort of a pastime is this? Right? This pastime is so unbelievable, even Krishna's incarnations come to watch it. Right? And when Krishna began the Rasa Lila with the gopis, there was 3 billion gopis, suddenly all of them were decorated with the most wonderful saris, most wonderful garlands, most wonderful gopi dots. Right? Just suddenly, everyone just became manifested. You know, the most wonderful, attractive forms to enjoy with Krishna. And everyone suddenly had instruments, right? Suddenly had, you know, sometimes you see Krishna, the pictures of Krishna in Vrindavan when he's dancing with the gopis, they have the sticks. You know, there's a particular dance they perform where they all...
Dunda.
Yeah, the dunda with the sticks, and they all, when they're doing the dancing, they're all like that. So suddenly all the gopis have the sticks, right? Yeah, you just try and organise a Harinam for 60 devotees downtown.
Right?
Did someone bring the battery for the mic? You know, did someone remember the cartels? Right, we need some water for someone to drink. It was all taken care of, right? Everything was taken care of. 3 billion gopis, everything was taken care of to the most minute detail, right? Nothing. How did that happen? This is Rasa Leela. You can't compare it to any other pastime. So therefore, it says Krishna's pastimes are the topmost pastimes. Right? So much so that everyone is attracted. Krishna is all attractive. It says, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that when Krishna performs Rasa Leela, even he more or less just says to Yogamaya, okay, I'll be a puppet. He says, you just take over and, you know, he says, I'm just like a puppet within all of this. This is so amazing what's going on by my own Shakti, by his own potency. He's so amazed, he just says, I'll just let go and just go along with it, he said, because this is just amazing. even he gets amazed at what's going on. He can't believe it, what's going on. It's so wonderful, like that. So this is Krishna. This is the Supreme Personality. So the Bhagavatam is teaching, especially in the 10th canto, that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the Krishnas to Bhagavan Swam. He is the original personality. And we're very fortunate because it's only a few more sleeps and it's Sri Krishna Janmashtami. So that's the day of all days, which is the most wonderful day of the year, which we can deepen as much as we can our eternal relationship with Krishna. And if we pray and pray and pray, then Krishna will reveal more of himself, his own personality to us, so we can deepen our relationship with him, if you want it, if you are interested. Like that. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
One small comment is, I heard that Lord Balaram is more powerful than Krishna. You said Krishna is more powerful, which is correct.
Krishna is more powerful. Yeah. You're saying the Brahma Vimohana Lila, when Krishna bewildered Lord Brahma, then it says Krishna bewildered Lord Brahma for 1 year. And it was only near the end of that year that Lord Balaram worked out that there was something mystical going on. So even Balaram is subordinate to Krishna's potency.
But power, strength.
Yeah, well, because Krishna is the source of everything, so therefore, ultimately, he is the strongest. Prabhupada said, just like Balaram is in Vrindavan, Balaram is leaning on the shoulder of Krishna. So Prabhupada says that means Krishna is stronger. It's all true, but still Krishna is the, that's why Bhagavatam says Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. He is the origin of all incarnations. He is the supreme. Any other points, questions or comments? Okay.
Yep. One comment. I drank 8 cups.
Of Varuni juice?
Yeah.
Nice.
So I beat it.
Yeah, I wasn't here to compete.
Next year.
Yeah. If you have me sitting next to you, then I'll get competitive. And then it'll be very hard to beat. But I'll let you swim in your glory for a little, for 1 year. Then maybe next year we'll sit next to each other and we'll see who the champion actually is. That's good though. 8 is impressive.
If we are trying to be devotees of Krishna, and friend of Krishna, supposed to be, then why Maya wants to meet us in between all the time?
Because Maya, her duty is to test if the devotee is actually sincere to come back to Krishna or not. She's testing us. So it is said that the spiritual master, he will never give a instruction which the disciple cannot pass the test. So it means that Maya is testing us continuously. Are we actually sincere in wanting to surrender to Krishna? Or are we attached to enjoying separately from Krishna? So that's why she's Krishna's servant. She's testing our sincerity. Any other question or comment? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.